The International Chemical Weapons Watchdog Group said today that Syria has completely destroyed the equipment it has that's needed to make chemical weapons. The announcement comes just ahead of tomorrow's deadline, which was set out as part of an agreement to avoid the use of force against Syria. There is another deadline ahead, though. Syria must now destroy its existing chemical weapons arsenal, nearly 1,300 tons worth. Joining us to talk about this is Jim Walsh, an expert in international security at MIT's Security Studies Program. Jim, welcome back.
Good to see you.
Well, good to see you. And tell us what the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons, this watchdog group, said in its report about what the Assad regime in Syria has already done.
Well, I think the summary would be so far, so good. You know, it's good that we're talking about this on Halloween, because when we started this process, we did not know whether it would be trick or treat. Would Assad sort of begrudgingly play along but really not cooperate? Would we make any progress here? And I think, you know, we're still early in this process, way early. But so far, they made a declaration. They allowed inspectors to verify that declaration, and they allowed the destruction of those production facilities. And what does that mean? That means he can't produce any more chemical weapons than he already has. And so now the focus is those stockpiles that already exist and what's going to happen to them.
You heard it here first. Jim Walsh has become the first person to put Halloween and Syria together in the same thing. But there were two production sites that, because of the ongoing conflict in Syria, could not be reached. How do inspectors know that this is a complete list, these 23 sites, or whether the Syrians are hiding some production sites?
Well, it's a great question. And when you and I talked about this some time ago, one of the issues was, how do you do this in the middle of a civil war?
Yeah.
And so with respect to these two sites, and I think there are four facilities at those two sites, we're in battle zones, one outside of Damascus, one someplace else, where they just couldn't assure the safety for the inspectors. Now, the Syrian government has made assurances to the organization that, well, there's nothing really there anyway, because most of it was moved out, but you don't know.
Yeah.
You know, and when we get to the end of this process, there will be this issue of completeness, because you're relying on Syria's declarations. Right now, there's a discrepancy between U.S. intelligence estimates of what the U.S. thinks Syria has and what Syria says that it has. And then the question is that discrepancy intentional? Is it a matter of counting rules and misunderstandings? We don't know. But I will say this to sort of put it in a greater context. Whatever it is, even if he, you know, manages to sneak off with a ton here out of 1,000 metric tons, this is significantly more damage to his chemical weapons program than would have been accomplished by missile strikes.
Could these production facilities be brought back?
Yes. Now, that's a great point. You know, if you can build a machine once, you can build it again. But it has to be said that Assad, beginning with his father, took years, decades to build this program. It required, at least in part, for the more sophisticated chemical agents like sarin and the VX gases, to the extent that they had those, that required importing machinery from Europe and abroad. So that would be a painstaking process to reconstitute. But in theory, they could.
Well, let's get to the next phase, Jim. Syria has turned in a plan, as required by the agreement, to completely destroy its existing chemical arsenal by the middle of next year. What do we know about the stockpile?
Well, I think there, again, luckily, there's some good news here. You know, all this, you know, success and failure turns on a lot of things. It turns a lot on commitment, as we've discussed, whether the country's really going to cooperate. Another are conditions on the ground. You know, there's a continuum here. When you make chemical weapons, you start out with lots of bulk agent, bulk chemicals in barrels or whatever.
Yeah.
Eventually, that results in a chemical weapon. And whether it's hard or more easy depends on where you are in that stage. Luckily, it appears as if most of Syria's chemical weapons are in the form, or chemical program is in the form, of bulk precursor agents. That's just agents sitting around, which definitely lends itself to destruction in an easier, more straightforward manner than if it was munitions, where you'd have to take them apart, remove the agent, destroy the munitions. So the conditions on the ground are good if we can just simply essentially put our arms around that precursor, that bulk precursor, get it out of there and destroy it in another country.
But that's the thing. Nobody wants to take it.
You know,
right?
Who wants to do that? I don't want to do that. But Norway looked like it was going to take it on. They recently declined that offer. Denmark has said it was going to help but hasn't defined that. Reports suggest that there are about six countries, all the big countries that are part of the P5, you know, the U.S., Russia, France, Great Britain, and China. But that Albania might be a candidate. They're out searching for candidates, but and they face a deadline. They have to have a plan in 2 weeks, written plan. And so getting someone on board is going to be a challenge. I think at the end of the day, you know, if Syria is willing to cooperate, they'll find someone. Even if it's us, we'll find someone to do it.
Well, but and 1,300 tons of chemical weapons, that seems like it's a lot easier for you to say, well, oh, yeah, here they all are, but maybe there's some over here. We gave some to this guy or we gave some to this country.
Yeah.
It's harder to track that, I would think.
Absolutely. Harder to track, well, both. Harder to track individual munitions that have already been fashioned. And, you know, if you have bulk liquid agent, you know, you could always take a little off the side and ship it. And you'll remember there was that whole period where we were deciding what to do and the call, you know, the congressional vote, and where if he was inclined, he could have moved things around. So, yeah, we're never going to know what we don't know. We're never going to know that we got 100% unless it shows up somewhere. But again, at the end of the day, you know, public policy is about do you come out ahead or behind, not whether you get perfection. And I think we're certainly by closing the production facilities, and we're going to get a big piece of this program, not maybe not all of it, but a big piece. And I think we'll end up, if this works, at the end of the day, better off than the alternative.
Is that including outside of Syria? Because obviously this has an impact in Syria. But what about the use of chemical weapons worldwide? If this works, does this do anything to reduce the amount of weapons or how easy it is for people to get them around the world?
You know, I think it does help. And I think it helps in a lot of ways. One, it means another country has given up those chemical weapons. It puts pressure on those that still have them to join the treaty. They are increasingly the outliers who will come under scrutiny and pressure. I think it also builds confidence in diplomacy and in the organization to be able to execute this task and make it happen. So I think it's a net win.
Jim Walsh, expert in international security at MIT's Security Studies Program. Thanks as always.
Thank you.
Funding for Here and Now comes from GEICO, protecting drivers and their families with insurance coverage for over 75 years. More at geico.com or 1-800-947-AUTO.